All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Red's Corner. Today we have, I'm going to throw two varies in here, a very, very special guest by the name of Leroy McGee. And if you saw the title, it might not make sense to you, but it'll make sense to a small number of people, and it'll make you chuckle a little bit. But, you know, Leroy, how have you been, man? What's up?
Thank you for having me. I've been really good, just living life, man.
What do you got going on?
Well, I'm about to finish my mission in 11 days, and I'll be able to work freely and do normal stuff, go on dates and all that good stuff.
So 11 days, that's pretty soon. That's actually very soon. Yeah,
right after Thanksgiving.
What do you plan to do?
I have I'm hopefully to get this pest control job.
Okay.
Hopefully.
How's that going? What processes are you going through right now?
Well, we talked today through FaceTime because he lives in Utah, just about introducing himself and the job and what Edge, which is the name of the pest control, like how it's founded. And, you know, they have many, many offices around the country, but only one here in Texas. That's the Dallas location. He's telling me, like, it'll be a summer job and he'll train me about it. And, you know, kind of looking forward for it to happen.
So you'll be doing like an apprenticeship almost and a sales job?
He's just training me for sales, and okay, I'll go and knock doors and might hear a lot of no's, but you know, that comes with the job.
Yeah, exactly. You got to deal with the no's, and finally, eventually you'll get a yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, walk me through your mind right now. Like, other than work, other than what you got going on, you know, physically in front of you, what do you got going on, like, mentally?
Man, I think I'm in the best mental spot I've ever been in my life. Just a lot of good things, but I'll always say you have to go through the bad things,
yep,
to get to the good things. You know, a lot of things in the last 7 years that I've gone through, but you know, I don't think I would change them, because you know, those situations, you know, made me who I am. And I know you've probably gone through some things, and everyone who hears this have gone through some things, and things that they wouldn't change, because I feel like if you change one bit of the story, you're not really yourself, if that makes any sense. Because it's one big journey, and everything, it's like telling a story. If you like, you're telling, you want to get everyone's story, you want to write everything perfectly, because let's say you miss one small detail that might be the biggest detail. Like if you're writing a book, that might be the attention grabber to all my book readers.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't change anything in my past, because it's who I am now. Like, why would you want to change that? Even if you don't feel like you're 100% you, what you've gone through has made you, and you don't want to change that.
For sure. Like, I heard this quote from, like, for those that don't know, I'm Mormon. And I heard this quote from a BYU basketball player, his grandma. She was telling him, do you have the power to change the past? And like, he told her when he was little, no. She says, worrying and trying to change the past is a dangerous thing. Like, I feel like sometimes we get so caught up in trying to change something, because it's either made us sad or worried about what someone's gonna say when we bring up our life story, our life past, or is that person gonna judge us? But really, I mean, it doesn't really matter if someone judges you or not. It's your story. Like, they don't have to listen and whatnot. But as long as you're comfortable telling your story and not focusing too much on trying to change something that's, you know, uncontrollable, you know, I think everything's good.
Yeah. So what made you? What made Leroy McGee right now?
Family, friends, you know, I don't call it. I have a lot of friends, but I use the term very loosely. I have a special group that I have two groups, really. You know, I have my Mormon friends and then my non-Mormon friends. But like, even between both of those groups, you know, that's a really close-knit group. I don't really like to put a lot of people in either one of those groups, because, you know, not everyone is your friends. I bet most of your parents, I know mine parents told me this growing up, not everyone is your friend. you know, the person that you might think is your friend is the one that's, you know, waiting for you to mess up and, you know.
Take advantage of that.
Definitely.
Okay, so how's family impacted you?
Man, my mom, can't say enough about her. Just, I mean, no one can really say everything about, you know, their mom, because, you know, we wouldn't be here without them, and, you know, we want to give our moms everything, but, like, compared to my siblings, I feel like I'm the most closest to my mom, and we act the same way, we like the same things, and just knowing how to talk to her, like, I feel like, you know, people always ask, like, when you're okay, like, to, do you have a special group or something to talk, people to talk to? But sometimes I feel like that special group of people might be harder to talk to if you don't really know how to talk to your parents or someone really close to you, your grandparent or anything. For this instance, I have both. I live with my mom and my grandma.
Okay.
And, you know, my grandma kind of replaced the role of my dad because he passed away 7 years ago. And, you know, just learning how to bond with them and talk to them has been, you know, essential for me to how to talk to other people.
Yeah. And one, you know, I'm sorry to hear that about your father. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, and it was a very tough story to talk about. But it makes you strong, man.
Yeah.
You know, so what is something, you know, in family that you've been told that just sits with you every day? Or taught or shown?
I mean, be kind to everyone. Like, you know, even times that, you know, not everyone deserves your kindness. But, you know, being as religious as I am, and, you know, Mormons or any Christians or whatever your faith is, you're taught to love your neighbor, because that's what the Savior would do. But, you know, I often tell some of my Mormon friends, like, that it's really hard to love your neighbor and be kind to them when they're being, you know, nasty back to you. Like, I mean, I have countless stories just over my mission, just of people, whether it's, you know, I don't really know how to say, just some of them have used racial slurs, homophobic slurs, just nasty comments. And it's really hard to show kindness and to treat those people how you would treat another friend or another family member. Like, you know, sometimes I feel like people use that statement so loosely, because until they're truly in a position where something like that's happened to them, how do you really, really act? You know, it's easier said than done.
Yeah. And that, does that happen a lot or?
Not too much. Okay. Just, you would think so, but not really. Just, I mean, I've had my moments on my mission this year, just more moments than my entire life. You know, I'm 21 and I've heard a lot of racial slurs, but, you know, this year I've heard far more than I've ever heard in my life. And, you know,
why do you think that?
Some people are ignorant and they don't care. Some people do it to get a rise or an action.
What's your retaliation? Do you just walk away? What do you do?
I mean, it depends. It really depends on the person, and depending on how that person is reacting, or how hostile are they coming. Like, for example, about a month and a half ago, I was walking out of a Brookshire's, you know, in Salina. And a lady just was, like, firing off N-words after N-word. Like, I don't know the lady. She doesn't know me. So, like, why? You know, more so that's when I want to know why. Like, out of all the words that you could have used, I mean, there's so many words that she could have used. And I don't know. Some people, I really don't know how to put it.
It just makes no sense, right?
Some people don't have a reason, and, like, I think some people are just out to be mean, just to be mean. Like, they don't have any reason for it.
Exactly.
And it just happens, and they want to make other people miserable because they're going through some hard times. But think about it. If, you know, if we all were like that, if we were all miserable, you know, what would the world truly be like? You know, we wouldn't really have friends, and everyone would be at each other's neck all the time. That's just bad energy.
Exactly. Well, one of the hardest things to understand is why someone is not kind.
Yeah.
Like, when you are so nice to someone, or, like, very, very nice to someone, and they're always rude, that's probably one of the hardest things to understand. What do you think about that?
I definitely agree. Like, I used to think this about, like, certain friends. Like, I would also say this, what you just said also goes sort of with this statement, like, when you've got a bunch of group of friends and you're hanging out and you're always passionate and, you know, compassionate to your friends and you care about them, and then your friends will either not put any effort or show lack thereof, and you'd be like, well, how come I'm supposed to be doing my job as a friend and caring for you and making sure you're all right, but, you know, if something's wrong, I'm there for you, but if the roles are switched, why are you not doing the same thing? And, you know, same thing, like, people, like, why do people expect kindness if someone who is being negative? Like, some people are like, oh, I just walk away from the situation, but, like, in your mind, that's what you would do, but until you're really with someone who's, all you're trying to do is being friendly as possible to them, they just start lashing out. Both sides get hostile. Like, I don't think there's a true rational way of people saying just, oh, I just walk away and just go about my business if someone's not being kind. That's clearly not how you would react, because you're going to start feeling threatened that they're approaching you that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. It's almost impossible to predict what's going to go on. And, you know, with all that negativity and stuff, though, you choose to be positive.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. How do you do that?
The people that are around me, like, you know, why surround yourself with people that aren't doing anything positive? I feel like that's where, not just me, just everyone in general, like, why would anyone be around someone who's not doing anything positive themselves and just getting into trouble? Because I feel like people tend to, you know, watch, and or sometimes you begin to act like how some of your friends are. Like, if someone is partying and drinking and smoking all day and that's all they do every day, eventually you're gonna catch on to those patterns and you'll say it's not cool in the beginning. And then if it just becomes a recurring thing, then now that person has looped you in it. So I just think, you know, I would say obviously being Mormon is one of those reasons, because, you know, there's a lot of things we can't and can't do in the church. But I also have a lot of non-Mormon friends who don't surround themselves with that kind of, maybe every once in a while, but it's not like a recurring thing. And
yeah.
College is also, I mean, as good as college is, you see a lot of negative in college and people trying to pull you down.
Would you say that it's a good thing to encounter negative people so you can learn to not be like them and also overcome people like that?
Definitely. Like, I think, like, I'll tell you a story. Like, in college, so I'm coming back from math class. My long, long math class. I hated that class. It was like 3 hours.
Dang.
For a math class. I was expecting, it was my sophomore year, so I was expecting my schedule. I was expecting that long of a class was going to be for my psych class, but my psych class was the shortest class I had all year. And, like, all we see is just these drug dogs around our dorm hall. And they're telling us not to go in. Everyone's like, oh, what's wrong and whatnot. But no one's telling us anything. The police isn't telling anything. Our REs aren't telling anything. So, you know, 15 minutes go by. We're able to get into our dorm hall. So I go up to my room. Everyone's able to go in their room but me. So it's like, go in my other roommate at the time. I was like, don't go in there. I was like, why not? I was like, they had found something in there. I was like, but they don't know who it is. I was like, found what? I was like, they had found a gun and whatnot and found drugs and whatnot. I was like, if that's any one of y'all's, I was like, who in their right mind would bring a gun to college and hide it in the dorm hall? So they had the dogs and like, then they found out. I was like, and it was one of my roommates, his friends, but none of us were in the room. So we don't know how that he got into our room because all of us had our keys. And so they had found it in there. I was like, and then everyone was asking like, how do you move on from this situation? I was like, well, I didn't really know him to begin with. I was like, I had talked to him and like whenever he was in the room, but anything's like, he goes, that's a really negative situation. I was like, well, yes, it is, but I had nothing to do with the situation, nor am I going to try to get involved by speaking. I think that's another thing. Like, I feel like we try to get to know someone, or we try to speak for someone without really getting to know them. Does that make a little bit of sense?
Yep.
Like, college, I think college is the one place where I feel like that's the most prevalent. Like, I feel sometimes in high school with certain friends, you'll defend your friend, but like college, you really don't know these people until you are making bonds with them. But I only spoken to him twice in 2 weeks, so I didn't know him. And there's like, I was like, I knew that he was in our room and I knew that he transferred from tech and whatnot. I was like, that should have gave it away. I was like, whoa, tech. But like, and his sister, they both were drug addicts, but I won't say any of their names. I don't know, just our RAs are trying to get answers out of us. I was like, why are you asking me? I was like, you should be asking them. Like, I don't know them, so I can't speak for them, and I'm not going to speak on their behalf, because I feel like now you're trying to make me criminate myself and only fall into where they're going, into a really negative scene.
So how did this all end?
They were expelled and
dang,
they were removed from campus and don't really know what happened from them since. I don't think they were quite, I think they were arrested, but then they were let go because their parents had bailed them out. But you know,
it's a good thing that you didn't get drawn into all that.
Glad I was in math class for 3 hours.
Yeah, dude. The math saved you that day.
It saved everyone in the dorm. It just so happened to be our room, and all three of us were just looking stupid.
Yeah, yeah. So, switching gears a little bit, I got a question for you. You know, where do you see yourself pretty soon, next couple of years? What do you see yourself doing? Where, when, how, why?
Man, I got the same question from the guy who was interviewing me for the pest control company. I told him, he goes, if money is not an object, what would you do? I told him, the most stereotypical answer, and a lot of people would, if money were no object, they want to live a really lavish life. Private jets, expensive cars, nice houses, and you know. But you can't really blame people for that, depending on your living situation, how you grew up. But I told him something realistic. I was like, that just isn't realistic for me, because you know, if I had a lot of money, you know, making sure my immediate family, you know, the family that I live with and some of my Mormon family, which I call my extended family, making sure some of them are financially stable, and investing in real estate, just making more money, because like, I feel like, and I watch this with a lot of athletes too, like, you know, athletes have most of their dream jobs, and the average person wants to be in their shoes. They make a lot of money, but they spend a lot of money on stupid things, and they go broke, and, you know, just living my life how I live now, but just semi-different. I don't think I would act funny because money changed me, but if anything, I would use the money to help out more people and do things that I can't do right now, like start profitable charities and, you know, stuff like that.
That's really humble.
You know, I always have visions. And we spoke about this a couple weeks ago. I spoke just like if I had a lot of money, what would I do? And like I see a lot of companies, and what I love fashion, I love music, I love a lot of things, but I've never seen is a fashion music industries come together or do like a joint thing. So like, you know, obviously you started Taco, and you know that would be, and I've seen this with one of my friends. So he has a clothing line, and like he has a music line attached to it. It's like, well, what if Taco Canoe became like its own enterprise? So like it does other things than just fashion and music, and it just was able to do media and all that stuff. Like, you know, if money were no object, I feel like that's where I would try to invest the most in, because you know that's a big dream and a big vision, and you know.
Just one big music and fashion company.
Just an enterprise, just doing everything, just
owns its own real estate, that kind of deal.
Just doing like, I had this vision, like, man, like doing like multiple headquarters, like do one here in Texas, like I could run a joint one in Utah, because I mean I love Utah.
Are you moving to Utah pretty soon?
No, I just love Utah. Not because it's Mormon capital. It's just it's a really nice place.
It is. I've been to Utah like twice snowboarding. It's really nice. It's
so crazy. I'm not as.
It's a hidden gem.
I'm not much for skiing and snowboarding, but their resorts there are really really nice, and a lot of it's just good people in Utah. And you know, when I went out for my mission, that's where I went for 2 weeks and to serve or to train what we call the MTC when in Provo. But I got to like do like a tour of all of North Utah. It was really cool. So like setting up a headquarters and doing something like, you know, having an indoor gym for like basketball, having a gym for lifting weights, if that's people who are into running trails, biking trails, studio lot for production and movies and whatnot, if people are and into that kind of things, and then another thing, having a studio, you know, kind of like how you just, I don't know, have visions.
Yeah, man, it's whether it be a dream or you just close your eyes or your eyes are open.
Sometimes I just think about it just in general. It's like, man, I see, my favorite record label for music is Columbia Records, and if I was a musician, I would love to get signed by Columbia Records. And a lot of my favorite musicians are signed to that label.
Who is?
Harry Styles, Blink-182, Lil TJ. Lil TJ.
Lil TJ is good. I like Lil TJ.
Polo G. Dominic Fike. Just, there are a lot of artists all under Columbia. And a lot of people signed with Columbia because of the family atmosphere, you know, that they have with, and, you know, Columbia Records, I think, has, like, a gym, like, a lifting gym. I was like, that's really cool. For weights and stuff, and, you know, and just working, talking to Austin, who's the head of the Chicago office for the pest control company, when they go out to Chicago, or all their locations, they have a gym for like the staff to work out with. They play basketball, pickup games all the time, and all that stuff. So it's real cool to mix work with a little bit of fun. And I think, you know, no one wants to constantly be working, like work all the time. Like you gotta be able to have some fun. I guess that's what I envision sometimes when I'm thinking
about. Work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
So right now, you know, what's the goal, like really short term? What are your next couple of moves?
So hopefully to get on with the pest control company. And
where does that take you?
I have no clue. I just want to work for a year and make some good money and kind of just stack up my options, because like, I kind of want to go into the Air Force and want to see, you know, the Air Force has so many opportunities in its own. Like, I'm deciding to be, if I want to be a pilot or if I want to be an engineer in the Air Force. I can't make up my mind on either one of those, but you know, those two are probably the next really big moves that I want to do. But I don't see I don't see myself fully committing to the Air Force in, for about a year.
Okay. What intrigues you about that?
I have family that they're in the Air Force. A lot of friends that are in the Air Force. And, you know, just... It just seemed like a good thing to do. Just, you know, why not serve the country? Why not?
Where does... So I don't know much about the Air Force. I know very little. What do you have to do to get there?
Well, you have to meet your weight requirements. You have to go to MEPS, take the ASVAB, then MEPS, then basic, and then go to tech school, and then you get enlisted, or they send you to one of the many bases. Just, you never know where you're going.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said next year you want to try and do this?
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully, well, not this upcoming year. I would shoot for 22.
You said 2022?
Yeah.
So, what do you have to do between now and then to ensure you get a spot?
Well, it's not the ensuring a spot, because, like, the air, just with the military in general, their goal is to make sure that they're not, they don't want you to rush into committing to the, because some people will commit and that might not be for them. So they encourage, and like the Navy, I had an interview or met with a recruiter for the Navy. So it's really between those two, you know, we really won't see how that'll go. But when I cross those bridge, I'll get there. But when I was talking to my Navy and my Air Force recruiter, they both stressed that, you know, the Air Force is here for you. It's like, you don't have to rush into the Air Force. It's like, when you're ready to come to the Air Force or the Navy or just the military in general, you know, get yourself, because some people aren't in the right mental health. That's another big thing. Like, if you're not in the right spot with yourself in general, whether it's mental, physical, how can you really go and... go elsewhere, especially serving our country, you know. So they just really encouraged me just to take my time, and that the military is always here
for. Okay.
So I think for anyone who wants to go into the military, you know, there are the things that I talked about, and every branch is different for qualifications to get into their specific branches, but you shouldn't be rushing to try to get there, because they'll find time to accommodate you and get you in there.
Okay. So you got a couple options then. Definitely, yeah. A couple options. So trying to think of something else to ask you. I'm not too sure. You got a lot going on, man.
Yeah, man. Just
busy guy.
Trying to stay busy.
So I'll start asking you a couple of just like, you know, short questions, stuff like that. So if you could, you know, people are going to be listening to this. People that know you are probably going to be listening to this. You know, what if you could motivate them or inspire them, you know, what would you tell them?
Just be themselves. Like, you know, I know it sounds cliche and everything, but, like, you know, there's no reason to try to change yourself to fit someone's bubble. That's what I'm going to use.
Just okay.
Their group or... their standards, like, you know, if that person can't accept you for you, why try to change because of them? Like, you know, also think about it this way. You're trying to change yourself for them, and they might quickly just move on from you. So now you're going to have to rechange yourself from a new group of people, for a new set of people. If you just be yourself, you'd be authentic in how you carry yourself, you know. Friends will come along, and you know, everything else will do its job, but just the main thing is to be authentic to yourself before you try to think about, you know, chasing after someone.
Okay. I really like how you say that, because I've known you since 2016. You know, let's say I probably met you August of 2016.
June.
And like
June 16. We met during the summer, right before the season started.
Okay, yeah. Back summer 16. Great summer, actually. Yeah,
super.
And The one thing I noticed about you all through my freshman year, because I was the only year that you were in school with me because you were a senior, was that you were always yourself, no matter what. No matter what people were saying behind your back, to your face, anywhere, you just were you, and that didn't matter to anyone else but you, and I always looked up to that, which I thought was pretty sweet.
Yeah, man.
So I was happy. I'm happy you said that, because you stayed true to that years and years later, and you probably still will, right?
I mean, it's important. Like I said, especially for me, like, I don't feel the need to change myself for anyone. That might work, and I'm not telling people what to do. If changing yourself makes you feel good about yourself, or changing for the right people, as long as you're not changing for the wrong people, and the wrong people are making you feel bad about yourself, because I think it's okay to change for the right group of people, because I feel like some group of people and friends will teach you some things that you didn't already know about yourself, so you do need to kind of adjust on the fly. But what I mean by be authentic, like, and not changing, like, don't place yourself, or don't put yourself in a place to fail.
Yeah. So if someone came up to you and was like, Leroy, you know, haven't been myself lately, I think I'm surrounded by the wrong people, I don't know what to do, what should I do?
Man, at first I just want to talk to them. We talk about what's wrong, and I let the conversation happen naturally. It's really hard to say what would you do in the moment. You just have to let the conversation form naturally. And the most important thing, especially, you know, I've been in that situation where I was like, oh, I'm not feeling myself, and I've gone to some people. What I've learned from them and what I've taught some other people is you got to be attentive and listen. I feel like that's the most important thing. Like, especially for someone, I wouldn't say that they're not crying out for help, but they're, you know, they need some attention in their life, but they need the good attention. They don't need all the wrong attention.
Okay.
And just let it flow naturally, and just provide some insight on some things that you went through that are maybe similar. Because no one really, like, I've gone through a lot of things, and I know a lot of people's parents pass away, a lot of people's grandparents pass away. I know a lot of people who can relate in my situation, so they give me insight. But the one person that really, like, especially, like, I know a lot of, most people in life tend to lose their parents later on in life, like, once we grow up and we're adults on our own, usually. But due to some unfortunate situations, that might not be the case for us, whether it be grandparents, siblings, whatever. We all lose a sibling sometimes, and especially, I know for me, like, when someone loses someone really close to them and someone that's important to them, I try to reach out to them, because I know what it's like, and, you know, I can provide just a little. I just want to be able to comfort them. Like, I'll tell if they want to hear, I'm not going to make the situation about me, but if they want to hear what I went through, I'll keep it brief, and I'll just try to keep them in the right spirits and stay uplifting, because it's really challenging to lose someone really close to you. And people's like, oh, it'll be fine. You know, that's a hard thing to, you know, in the long run, yes, we will be fine. But, like, sometimes I don't think we really see that when we're going through our moments.
So when that did happen to you, how did you cope with it? How did you stay strong?
It took a couple years, I'm not going to lie. It took a long time, because I was so angry and frustrated. And I feel like, I don't know, I can't talk and I can't speak for everyone. But for me, when I lost my dad, I feel angry, because that's the only emotion that I could display. And it also display in the wrong ways, because I was angry emotionally, it come off physically. Like, I didn't care about people or people's feelings, because I was so hurt and whatnot. But then 2015 was a big changing year for me. I have a lot of friends who are graduating or members. Some of them still serving. Some of them aren't serving. And kind of that's, you know, the church kind of, it fell into place for me. And then 2016, I was made a member. I was baptized and whatnot. But one thing, like, I also know, like, I had a friend, they lost their dad. And they were telling me, I was asking them, I was like, how did you stay strong, you know, because they lost their dad a few years ago before I lost mine. And they was like, well, growing close with God, I was like, you know, I was like, I didn't understand it because I was so angry with him and I didn't care to make forward with a relationship with God. But, you know, I think that's a big one. You know, a relationship with God is really, really important. And cross country, I mean, I can't say it enough. Cross country also played a really big role into my life because I had a lot of people, whether it was both the boys and the girls, part of the team, family that care for me. So, you know, I never always felt alone. You know, I still feel alone sometimes, but, you know, I try not to get in that mood. And, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah, it all makes sense. And what I've come to know sometimes is, hey, it's all right to, you know, be alone sometimes. That's when we grow. That's when we're alone, like physically alone, that's when we get to know ourselves the best. That's when we discover new things about ourselves. And, you know, it's a great big thing that you overcame. That's a strength builder. That's a mind builder. That's a life builder. It's helped you become who you are. I've seen it. Lots of people have seen it. I can tell you that. One, two, people look up to it. So just keep doing what you're doing. One, and two, you know, keep grinding for it. Those passions and dreams you have, you make it come true, and you never let a naysayer deny you. I've seen that. you hear that honk outside?
Yeah.
I think that's the food delivery truck for the construction workers.
Yeah.
They always fly by honking. I don't know. Johnson tries to sleep in sometimes, and then they'll start honking. Wakes him up. But, yeah, man, it's... You've lived a... I don't even know how to piece it together, but you've lived a very
different
life, but that's not a bad thing. No.
Not at all. I mean, all of our lives are truly different, so, you know, we all come from different upbringings and different challenges, and we meet different people that make our lives and how the rest of it turns out. Like, man, I often think, what if I had not joined the cross country team? Just think about all of our memories that we made together in cross country, and just of my 4-3 years of running cross country, whether it was to the verge of choking Leon out from time to time.
Yeah, there were some fights in the locker room,
but verbal fights. They were never really fit. They were close to physical, but non super physical.
We're a bunch of cross country kids. We can't fight.
Whereas Choi and I, I forgot what we were debating.
I remember that day.
And he got mad, I got mad, and it just, luckily, everything went good because we apologized at the end of the week.
Yeah, one of the cross-country memories I have with you is when Bad and Bougie was really popular, and you would just play it all the time and go crazy to all that the song. Time.
Or no, my favorite cross-country memory, oh man, I still remember this. It was my senior year. We were coming from Jesuit. It was because varsity boys and girls ran at a different race that JV ran. We ran at Jesuit.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot where varsity ran, and, like, you know, we were listening to music, so I had my Beats Pill at the time, and I'm playing music, and then I started playing Devastated by Joey Badass.
Every time I listen to that song, I think about you. I'm being serious here.
I started thinking of Robert. I think of Robert every time when I think of that song, because Robert went from hating that song to loving that song.
You played that song more than Bad and Bougie.
All the time. And it got to the point where the whole locker room knew Devastated. It was so funny.
Well, you're the reason I'm a Joey Badass fan.
Man, I love love Joey Badass. He speaks.
He's good. He's talented.
Truth, yes. And realness in his music, you know.
He's in my top five.
I mean, for some people, you know, shooting and popping pills and doing drugs might appeal to them, but, you know, I'm all about learning things, and his music will make you learn a whole bunch of stuff, and he tells a different story.
Yeah. Different. I mean, the lyrics in Devastated is, I used to feel so devastated. I felt like I could never make it.
Like, I only listened to, believe it or not, I only was listening to it because I found it on a concert that was on MTV, and it was catchy. That's the only reason.
It is catchy.
And I didn't realize it was going to be on All American Badass. And then when the album came out, I was like,
album.
It was on there. I was like, man, this was hyped. And Land of the Free is, I think, my favorite song from that album because he speaks. Legendary is a good one because it has J. Cole, and they both trade knowing stuff and being really lyrical and stuff. But also American Idol, the opening track is, you know, they're all, but he's also talking about racial injustices, what it's like to be black in America, what it's like growing up in Brooklyn, but that's what I like, too, because he also talks about being from Brooklyn, how he made $1 million before he turned 21, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know. He made $1 million before he turned 21, then doubled that at 19. I think now he's got I don't know what his net worth is, but he's on the Forbes list. Man, that's crazy.
He's going to drop a new album pretty soon.
He really does, because Christ Conscience is one of my favorite. It was the very first song I heard from him. And that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's a wild song. Just every time I just think of Devastated, man, I always think, I just think of our lock. Oh, do you know why I think of it like that? Because we were coming from that meet. We went to CC's and I don't know how it felt like we spent forever at CC's because we were in there a long time. We came back, we were playing it on the bus again. We got in the locker room, started playing it right before the pep rally. That's
yes.
I totally remember that day.
You're like waking up a memory in my mind, dude. Right now. What I remember is you this is going to sound weird, but this is what happens in high school locker room. Everyone showers together and Leroy's just blasting Devastated in the shower. I remember that song. Anytime it comes on, I'm like, Leroy. And that's funny that you think of Robert.
He didn't like the song. And that's the thing. Like, he was the first one to start, other than me, he was the first one to start singing the song when it came on. I was like,
Robert comes around to things. I love Robert.
And then the whole team just got into it.
Yeah, dude. Well, look, here, let me show you this. So I'm on Spotify, right? And if you go to, I have like my top favorite artists ranked up to 35, and you go 1 through 5, Lil Wayne, Big Sean, Kendrick Lamar, Joey Badass, and Lil Skies are my top 5.
Wow.
And yeah, you're the reason, look at the first Joey Badass song on there. It's Devastated.
It's Devastated. Man.
Anyone on cross country that was on the team,
they know.
2016, 2017 can relate to this story.
Man, they know.
It's just too good. It's just good.
We made so many memories that year. Just it was so up and down. Like,
there's one thing I gotta ask you about, because this is probably everyone's biggest memory of you, was when you led the race at district the whole time. and then you probably fell out of the race 200 meters left.
Yeah.
It was Wyatt was there.
Wyatt.
Nick was there. What happened?
Oh, Wyatt. let's start with Wyatt first, because he always brings this up every time we talk, you know, just about cross-country days. Like, he's like, do you remember the time where you were running on alongside of me and then you pushed me forward? I was like, yes, I remember. I was like, oh, he goes, why? I was like, well, I'm not going to throw my mom underneath the bus here. But she didn't know, and I didn't know. I had two blueberry muffins before the race, you know, and I thought it was fine until right before the race. I just didn't start feeling too well. I kept the wrapper in my bag, And, like, man, the race starts. And I told the team, I was like, I'm not feeling too good.
Yeah, I remember that.
Don't worry about how I'm doing. I was like, you finish your race. It was a really stereotypical, typical speech, minus I'm not feeling too well. It just, I don't know what happened. Then, like, gun goes off. It's me, Nick, and the guy from McKinney North in 1, 2, and 3 the entire race. And, like, Coach Grenier is yelling. He's like, "You're about to break your record." As we're going up the hill,
the last hill.
No, the last hill was coming down.
Okay.
The second hill. So, you know, we get out, we go up the first hill, we run all the way.
Yep.
I hate that.
Myers Park.
I don't know why they chose to make us run all the way out of the way, then just to get back on trail to run back up the hill, and like. Then Coach Housenick, wow, I can't remember. I can't believe I still remember her. They're both yelling, and Coach Housenick starts running with me, and then she stops, and, like, we're about to go back down the Garden of Flowers, and that's really where my vision started. I started getting blurry vision, and I really felt like I was going to puke that right there, but I couldn't stop, and then I was losing my lead, from Nick. But I still had enough separation. If I were to win the race, I still had enough separation from the McKinney North guy at this point. It was maybe about 50 meters. But during the second hill, Coach Grenier goes, "You had him by a whole margin." He's like, "When you got to the top of the hill, he was in the middle of the hill on the." I was like, okay, don't tell me no more. Just stop. Just stop. Because he was telling me this during the race. He's like, "He's far behind you. Keep going." I was like, but then I was kind of cruising at this point. And Wyatt catches up to me. He starts catching up first. Then Wyatt catches up. I grab onto Wyatt because I start losing my vision. I feel like I'm about to puke. And I start wobbling. So I had to grab onto him and run with him for a side. And then I knew I was going to throw up, so I pushed him forward because I didn't want to puke on him, because that's the way that it was going. Because if I'd have held on to him any longer, he'd have been really mad at me.
Yeah.
And then I fall, but I didn't black out. I only fell on my own will. Then I got back up, and then as soon as I got back up, I ran for a bit, and then it was just lights out.
Yeah, so that's your point of view. Let me tell you how I saw this. The whole race, I saw you just in first place the whole time, just booking it. And I'm way back because I was pretty slow freshman year, running like 22 minutes. And I just remember seeing you go down the hill, first place. And then next thing you know, 5 minutes later, I come through and I saw you getting carted away on a gator or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's a crazy way to go.
Man, but I don't regret it. I don't think I would change how I ran the race or anything. I also knew that, you know, high school. I think it was a perfect ending to my high school career. I often felt like in previous races that I left a lot more out there, that I could have raced harder in certain races. Like, especially my whole junior year, I got plagued with a bunch of injuries. And, you know, and I was running varsity with toe injuries, you know, my junior year. Because this is where Coach Allen, so right before, they made the coaching change that summer. So I was like, I don't think I'm going to be varsity. And then Coach Grenier was like, "Oh, we're going to have you run both." I was like, "Oh, that." I told him, to be honest, I don't think I deserve to be on varsity. He's like, "Well," he says, "Why not?" I was like, I got all these plaguing injuries. Like, well, if you could run your entire junior year with toe injuries, you could run varsity your senior year. But I also think it was perfect too, because Adam was way faster than me. He still is way faster.
He's
than
a
me.
Beast.
Adam is a beast. His brother gets married on Friday.
Yeah,
I go to that.
I
wedding.
Heard that was pretty soon.
Yeah, Calvin, can't wait. But Adam, you know, I also thought it was fitting. I was like, what other person? Jordan was on varsity. Cade Cutter. I was thinking of Cade Cutter's brother. Cutter, Ryan,
Choi,
Velez.
Williams, I think. No, maybe not Williams.
Yeah. Not that race, but he was on varsity throughout the season. And I ran a couple varsity
Rizzo.
Races. Rizzo. Yeah. I ran a couple varsity races that year for the most part. I also thought it was a cool chance to just be with JV and just, you know, I wouldn't say mentor or anything, but if anything, I feel like you guys mentored me. Just, I learned so much from everyone else, and, you know, I gave it, to me, I feel like I gave it all on that, my last race. So I don't really.
That's good. Yeah, you gave it your all, man. That's great. And I think that's a great way to end it, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Great way to end this podcast. Thank you for being on the show. One, I say that a lot. I go one and then two, whatever. I don't really give a fuck. But the, almost an hour, right?
Yeah, man.
It goes by pretty fast, doesn't it?
Super.
Anything else you want to say?
Man, just thank you for having me on the podcast and for everyone that supports me and that are friends of mine. You know, just thank you for always having my back during tough times, and, you know, glad that we're friends. And some of us may not be on speaking terms, but, like, I still care about you guys and I still pray for you guys, and hopefully whatever I did or you did to me, hopefully we can overcome those things and rekindle those friendships.
I like it. Leroy McGee, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Peace out.